A Breakfast Huddle with Elliot Danker, Yasmin Yonkers, and Ryan Huang. Replay from Money FM 89.3.
How's your first day of the year going by in terms of work day? And I believe by now the stress of dropping the kids off would be over, right, Stan?
Then you got to think about the stress of picking them up later.
Oh, that too. Okay. Well, I'm glad we're calmly here in the studio and not having to worry about such errands. Let's turn our attention to big news that came out. I guess it was really covered in the press quite a bit yesterday. The fact that seniors living in 5-room and larger flats will now be able to sell part of their leases back to the Housing Board effective yesterday. And this would then allow them to monetize their homes while even continuing to live there.
Now, previously, the lease buyback scheme was available only to owners of 4-room or smaller HDB flats. And all owners must reach the eligibility age, currently set at 65 years, before they can sell part of the lease back.
What about the other criteria? Well, they must have a gross monthly household income of $12,000 or less, with at least one of the owners being a Singaporean, and they must have at least 20 years of lease to sell. So there are still plenty of boxes to tick there before you can partake in this scheme. At the same time, owners must keep a minimum of 15 to 30 years of lease, depending on their age.
That's right. Now, according to the HDB, as of November last year, not too long ago, about 34,000 families would benefit from extending the scheme to 5-roomers, and that brings the total number of eligible households to about 130,000. And we have someone here to give us more insight to this whole scheme.
Absolutely. We welcome to the studio Professor Sing Tian Fu, Director of Institute of Real Estate and Urban Studies at the National University of Singapore. Prof Sing, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Happy
morning.
New Year.
Happy New Year to everyone.
So nice to have you back on the program. So HDB's lease buyback scheme, been around since 2009, right? Allowing the senior households to monetize their HDB flats. We were talking about that. And then, of course, the government has expanded the eligibility of this scheme to make it available to more seniors. One of the motivations, perhaps, Singapore's population is getting older. We can't deny that. And people are staying single on there. So what are the numbers behind this, Prof?
Yeah, actually, we look at the number of senior, or we call it those people 65 years and above. I think currently probably one in six. I think another, by 2030, we're probably expecting about one in four of these residents will be 65 and above. I think these people probably will be start planning for their retirements and also how to monetize their asset, especially the HDB flat. So I think these LPS come timely, actually allow people to have some time to plan ahead for their retirement.
Yeah. But, you know, the tweaks that we were recapping just now was only announced yesterday. I know it was New Year's Day. It was a holiday. Did you manage to hear any feedback from the people in your industry or those you spoke with?
Yeah, actually, this policy has been made known, so I think, in the last national delivery by the Minister of National Development. I think they has mentioned about extending this to cover bigger room type, because some older residents who live in this bigger flat also thinking about joining this LBS scheme.
Sure. Yeah, so they were already anticipating this,
right,
almost.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how important, Professor, is this scheme? I mean, seniors, we expect them, you know, as they age, as their kids grow up and move out, you think that they want to, you know, sell their flats, downsize, downgrade to a smaller apartment. So how important is this scheme and how relevant it is?
I think compared to others options of monetizing, like right-sizing, I think the HDB also offer what we call a silver housing bonus scheme. I think for this LBS, one feature of this LBS is that people can continue to live in the house, in the environment they are familiar with, without having to move out from the house. At the same time, they actually can sell the tail end of the lease back to the governments. So in the sense, they actually can receive partially sale proceed, then for the balance of the lease, they may not need to use them.
All right, we're speaking with Prof Sing Tian Fu, Director of Institute of Real Estate and Urban Studies of NUS. We're so pleased to have you here in the studio on this first work day of 2019. So Stan and I were just recapping all the eligibility of LBS, or the lease buyback scheme. There's so many, but I'll just do the basic one. I'll recap that all owners must reach the eligibility age, currently set at 65 years. So if someone is eligible for LBS, Prof, can you go through some of the questions they should be asking themselves before they decide to take it up?
Yeah, I think the 65 years is actually one of the eligibility criteria. Important, if you are before or younger than 65 years old, you probably have to think about other options. I think for anyone who plan to participate in this LPS, they have to consider one important question they need to think about is retaining leases, how long they want to retain or how long they want to continue. Because I think the minimum cutoff age is actually 95. If they're 65, they have to keep at least 30 years. If they're 70 years, they have to keep 25 years lease at least to stay in the house. So I think there's a trade-off between the length of the lease they retain and also the proceeds they're going to receive. Because the longer you keep, the smaller will be the tail-end lease that you sell back to the HDB. So the proceeds you're going to receive today will be smaller. So this is one of the questions that the LBS participant had to think about to make a choice. You want a longer lease or shorter leases, and there's a trade-off on the prices or cash you receive. And this is one of the concerns many senior residents will ask. It's like, what happened if I outlive this minimum lease? What happened if I outlive 95 years old?
Which is highly possible, given the medical technology that we have.
There's uncertainty. I think the HDB have already assured these people that even you outlive this 95 years term, they'll still continue to find options, explore for the different options for them to continue to stay in the place. So likely that they'll be evicted from the house, if they outlive 95. This is a very long time ahead. So these are some of the concern. Other than that, I think these people also asking about the valuations about this tail end. It's a very complex issue because you are not selling the current leases, you are selling the tail end of leases, which could be 30 years later. So the valuations is rather complex issues. Now you are not trying to determine the value today, but the value today for the balance of the leases. So it requires a lot more education on that aspect.
Okay, thank you for fleshing all that out.
A lot of variable factors, talking about how long you expect your life expectancy to be, especially as you age, and also, what would the market prices be like going forward as well. In the studio today, we're speaking with Professor Sing Tian Fu, who is Director of Institute of Real Estate and Urban Studies from the National University of Singapore, joining us. Professor Sing, do you think there is still a lot more scope or need to expand the scheme? It's been expanded, but any more scope beyond that?
If we look at the number of flats that that can be eligible to participate in this scheme, has been expanded from 100 to about 130,000. If 5-room type are included, I think it basically covers most of the HDB type. If you are eligible, you are 65. If your income are below 12,000, you should be eligible to participate. So I think the lease buyback scheme basically to help the public housing or subsidized housing's owners to be able to monetize it. I think at the moment, those people who live in the EC or private, they soon such scheme. I think in the private sector, they used to have a similar or comparable scheme called reverse mortgage, but it wasn't very well subscribed. So currently, these options are already up for most of these EC and private owners.
Okay. Yeah. We've covered eligibility issues and the questions one should ask before taking up the scheme. But this LBS scheme, how do you see this affecting the housing market for both public and private housing supply and prices?
I think the number of people who have participated is still relatively small. We're talking about around 3,005 who have actually registered for this LPS. So the short-term impacts may not be significant. These people who joined the LPS scheme, they are not allowed to put their houses back to the resale market for sale. So in short-term, the supply of this resale market flat will be smaller. Since the number is not significantly large, so the impact in short term may not be significant unless we see a larger numbers, and when the number of people who participate in LBS increase significantly over time, then probably government has to think about how to increase supply in the BTO market.
Yes, a very, very good point that you have raised, because that's something else that we want to find out more. Because the other factor to look out for is the voluntary early redevelopment scheme, or VERS. A large quantity of older flats could potentially be removed from the resale market and then returned to HDB. A problem that's compounded if HDB is unable to step up the supply of BTO flats, like you mentioned, Professor. How worrying is this scenario?
by the time the flat reached 70 years, I think now is still a lot of detail need to be worked out. I think VERS is a very important urban renewal tool, actually, is for government to use this tool to help rejuvenate older estates by the time they reach 90 years old. So at the moment, the older HDB flat probably around 50 years. So we still have another 20 years to go before we reach that stage. I think that's one concern, because a lot of these flats are built in the earlier years, 1960, 70. In a rush, we try to meet the housing need at the time when the population number is growing at a very fast rate. Going forward, I don't anticipate the population growth to be fast compared to the earlier years. So I think it's probably VERS is a good tool to allow government to systematically rejuvenate partially or selectively some of the older housing estate. Instead of waiting for all this flat to be expired at the same time, the leases, then we will probably face with the entire housing
problem,
estate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's become empty, you know, hollow or empty.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts there. Prof. Sing Tian Fu, who's also the Dean's Chair, Associate Professor and Director of Institute of Real Estate and Urban Studies at NUS, with us here. And we've been talking LBS, we've been talking property, Singapore's population boom in its first 40 years. We saw a massive explosion of households. In fact, we heard Prof. talk about it earlier, about how they were just rushing and rushing to build to meet the shortage. So there was a mushrooming of public housing to meet all those needs. And then we had a period of pretty strong growth in our population in the 80s and 90s, with an annual rate ranging from 3 to 5%.
But now the growth rate has moderated a bit to around 1.4%. So what is the future of Singapore's public housing? Well, according to our expert with us in the studio today, we should consider building more jumbo jets.
Jumbo flats.
Did I say jumbo jets?
I don't mind building jumbo jets. I just don't have the budget.
That's true.
Yeah.
Jumbo flats, more like it, to encourage young Singaporean couples to live with their aged parents and have kids.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that's a bit of a traditional view. Prof. Sing Tian Fu, welcome back to this chat. So jumbo flats, huh? What do you think of jumbo jets, by the way? Not a good idea?
Well, they'll be much more expensive.
So those jumbo flats, honestly. Yeah, why do you think it's time for HDB to shift gears and ramp up housing supply in that direction?
I think we have been facing these twin challenges in demographic changes. We are talking about aging on one hand. On the other hand, we have also facing problems of low fertility. So I think governments have been working in the past, you know, trying to encourage younger couples to get married early, to have children, settle down. And it seems that the policy have been...
It's not most successful.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Yeah.
So is there a way, different ways, you know, trying to encourage people to have more children?
Yeah.
What are the causes? You know, so because I think this is important to find the root cause before actually we find the solution. I think there this is not news to Singapore. I think many countries face, especially Asian countries, they're facing the same problems of low fertility rate. So one of the issues have been raised when I was on sabbatical in Taiwan. We are working with two experts in the local in Taiwan University. They're also facing a problem. One of the arguments they actually put out is high housing costs causes people to delay their marriage and also to have children later. I'm not sure whether this is the same kind of concern here. It seems like there's no causal effects between housing and having children, but there seems to shown that there's some causal effect, but direction of causality is more complex, more difficult to ascertain. Whether you have a smaller housing flat or less space, couple do not want to have more children, or is it because couple have less children, then the developer or the government responded to this smaller household size by building a smaller housing unit. So this actually, the causal effect is difficult to establish because I think it takes a long time for this cause and effect to take the effects.
So while all that research is going on, and assuming, you know, your theory is right, that if families stay together in the kind of the older traditional way in a jumbo flat, you know, you're thinking that, I guess what, the population will grow a little bit more if everybody lives together and, you know, parents actually have people to take care of their kids?
But at least from the study, we've shown that one of the concerns is actually about the opportunity cost for many of these young couple.
Yeah.
I think for them to have children, especially couples who live, both actually working couple, having children is actually may delay, especially for the female their career's path. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the considerations. If you have childcare support formed internally, I think, of course, we can have a lot of others external kind of childcare support, but it's very different compared to having your own parents or own willing to look after the children. This is one of the factors, and not because of housing alone, but I think they feel that this is possibly one of the factors that can they are concerned about having children and who is looking after children, who is bringing up the children especially. By having a bigger flat, of course a lot of people are still concerned about living together with the parents, the parent-in-law. These are some of the issues, the family issues they have to actually work out. I think to have children living together, so of course there are others concerned as well. But having children around to look after the children, I think this can actually arouse a lot of younger couples' concern of having children. Probably, why not?
Well, thank you for that point of view.
And in relation to, changing family sizes and all, Professor, do you think HDB and private developers have responded to the dwindling trends in household sizes by building maybe smaller flats, private apartments? Or do you think household sizes actually have shrunk because developers are building smaller apartments? Chicken and egg situation. Which do you think came first?
For private residential market, at least a high housing price actually drive the smaller unit, the supply of smaller or shoebox unit. But I think the government actually recognize some of these concerns. Having too small houses may not be good for the family's activities and so on. I think they actually introduced in the last few months a minimum size, minimum average size. This is to curb having too many of these smaller size unit. I think, of course, I think by having a bigger size flat, you probably have to fork out more money for purchase.
That's also a chicken. That's the thing. See, bigger houses cost more. Yeah. And how's that going to be for families? It's going to impact their disposable income, especially after taking into account serving the home loans, Prof. Please comment on that.
Yeah, there's also the balance between financials and also children's child bringing is a very costly kind of event. So I think you commit to a longer term kind of. So I think government have already provided a lot of other support scheme. I think housing may be one way through the HDB's buildings, three generation flat. If you can allow parents and the family to live together and look after the children, you can actually, in a sense, reduce certain financing costs.
So the house costs more, but then you save on childcare and other things. Even the cost of food, perhaps, because it's cheaper to cook for a big family than to have two people go out and pay for themselves.
That's right. More importantly, also to try to promote family bondings and to have a better kind of long-term family bonding and relationship, because I think not just of children problems, we also have to look after the parents, moving forward and have more people become 65 and above a few years later.
Okay, gosh, we're going back to the old days, isn't it? Almost,
Larger families, and hopefully larger flats as well. Sounds reasonable, but I mean, in land-scarce Singapore, is that really somewhat realistic?
Yeah, I think it's costly to have bigger flat.
Yeah.
I think given the constraint in the land's supply, I think there's always a trade-off. By having more bigger flat, then some of the others use may have to give way. I think this may not be necessarily a bad thing, because we don't expect every family to opt for this three-generation flat. At least if some of the younger couple actually can respond or may be encouraged to have more baby because of this bigger flat, why not? No, you can solve partially some of this demography issue.
Okay. And then how easily can it be executed, you think?
Actually,
to have sort of jumbo flats and more of what you dream of, Prof.
I think the jumbo flat is actually one-off kind of move by HDB in 1989, when they actually have a lot of unsold unit. They try to combine two into one.
A lot of them were in the Woodlands area,
right? Woodland, yeah, Woodlands. And we also saw some of them in Sabawang area. But moving forward, I think the HDB may not go back to that route. But I think instead, they are encouraged to have bigger flat in terms of three-generation flat. A lot of people are concerned about, only 5 square meter bigger. But you have more bedroom, more bathrooms.
Dual key, maybe.
Not dual key, actually. Dual key, maybe for private sector.
That's for the private sector, okay.
Yeah.
Prof. Sing Tian Fu, he's been here in the studio with us. Can you just quickly talk about what real estate trends could be this year, in this brand new year?
There'll be a lot of supply coming out. Yeah. I think uncertainty as well in the external environment. So moving forward, I think there are a lot of people actually concerned about will the economic growth strong enough to continue to absorb some of this new supply coming out in the market? Because I think 2017, 2018, we see a lot of collective sales. Some of these land sales will be slowly or gradually come into the market in terms of supply.
Sure.
So we're probably expecting a large number of supply coming out in the market. But coupled with uncertainty in terms of external environments, I think this is something that we have to watch carefully moving forward. We will be able to continue the kind of strong, especially look at November, you know, the year-end kind of demands, a sudden surge in the demands in the sales.
Yeah.
I think whether this is sustainable moving forward, this is something that we have to concern.
I'm sure that you will be keeping your eye on that.
Correct.
And I hope that later this year you don't mind returning to the studio, to give us, a mid-year assessment of sorts. Yeah,
right.
Prof. Sing Tian Fu is the Director of Institute of Real Estate and Urban Studies, also Dean's Chair, Associate Professor at NUS. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.